Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Absalom's true intentions revealed. We're in 2 Samuel chapter 15. Joab has sent this woman into the presence of David with this false story to deceive David. Her deception is successful for a brief time. David sees through her story and she confesses, yes, Joab has put me up to this. And David still says, okay, Absalom is in exile in Geshur. Joab, go get him, bring him back. So he returns from Geshur and Absalom takes up his residency again in Jerusalem. Thereby, Joab's plan seems to have worked. But as we went ahead a couple weeks ago and just saw highlights of what's coming in the next chapters of 2 Samuel, this is a dismal failure because civil war is coming. Would it have come anyway? Probably. Ultimately, Joab's plan failed. And I think the greatest thing we can see in these latest chapters in our study is the incredible lack of prayer and seeking God's face. Hence, what is not written in Scripture is very profound. It's not said, and David prayed. And Joab prayed. And Absalom prayed. And go down the line, it's not there. Hence, we see deceptions and smoke screens and lies and frustration and anger and bitterness. And God surely does not want this among His people. In chapter 15, we're going to see Absalom exalting himself before the people. He's going to rebel against his own father, King David, to seize the kingdom. David learns of the rebellion and has to flee from Jerusalem. Obviously greatly reduced. But this is what's coming in our study in 2 Samuel. Let us read tonight our text, starting at 2 Samuel 14:33. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is of one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee. Absalom said moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. The overwhelming theme here is David is suffering the consequences and the punishment of his sin with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah. Quote, Absalom's name signifies the peace of his father, yet he proves to be his greatest trouble. So often are we disappointed in our expectations from the creature. The sword entailed upon David's house had hitherto been among his children, but now it begins to be drawn against himself with this aggravation that he may thank himself for it. For had he done justice upon the murderer, he would have prevented the traitor. The story of Absalom's rebellion begins with this chapter, but we must go over 3 or 4 more before we see the end of it. And it is in this chapter we see Absalom setting himself up before the people to steal their minds, their thinking, their convictions away from his father so that he could overthrow the kingdom. Let's consider his show of majesty. 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 1, it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Which then begs the question in chapter 15, verse 1, and it came to pass after this. After what? Well, that's why we began our reading of our text at chapter 14, 33. Remember, chapter verse divisions in the Bible are man-made. And I'm glad they're there. It makes it easy for us to navigate the Scriptures. But don't let them become a stumbling block that we forget what happened in the immediate verse before. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, Absalom came to the king. And so we have this meeting. Absalom was 3 years in exile in Geshur. He then came home for 2 more years in Jerusalem. The king would not speak to him. 5 years. And finally, there is this meeting at the end of chapter 14, verse 33. Absalom came to the king, bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom, and it didn't prove anything, because in chapter 15, verse 1, and it came to pass after this, Absalom prepared chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him, and he is going to put on a display of majesty that has not been known in Israel. So it is. Absalom had a show. He did bow. He did humble himself, O king. And David had a show. He kissed him. And yet the tension was just as great when their meeting parted. But oh, it could be said, we met. We talked. Those who were in the king's court would say, yeah, I saw it. Absalom came in. He was there before the king. David allowed him into his presence. But nothing was resolved. Very, very sad state of affairs. Thus, what we're going to see is in this state of unity, there is no unity, but a heart of rebellion, and he is now going to be very bold outwardly and set himself up before the king in the gate. Again, a quote, "The story of Absalom reveals the type of character that is most dangerous and dreadful. His was not an impulsive nature, hurried away by gusts of passion into sin. There is much allowance to be made for such hot-tempered spirits. The misdemeanors of which they are guilty are not, as a rule, so reprehensible as those which are perpetrated by the authors in cold blood. They are more likely than the latter to be only escapades from virtue, exceptions to a course that is ordinarily straightforward and well-meaning. Absalom's wickedness was deliberate and studied. His character is evinced in the way he avenged the outrage done by Amnon to his sister. Inwardly calculating, it took 2 years before he murdered Amnon. 3 years in Geshur, 2 years did not talk to his father, and now he is going to hatch his plot. This story is continuing, David's reaping from his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah. It fueled the fire when David did not do anything to reprimand Amnon. His sister was defiled, and the king, his father, her father, did nothing about it. He murdered his brother, lived in exile 3 years, came home, and dad wouldn't speak to him for 2 years. He had a bad attitude for a long time, and it became a deep root of bitterness. It's true. Amnon was wrong, very wrong, to rape Tamar. David was wrong to not do anything for justice. By the same token, Absalom should have trusted God. Everyone is wronged in this life. Did you know that? We're all going to be wronged in this life. What are you going to do about it? Let it in the hand of God. Let it in the hand of God. Isn't it interesting? Absalom's rebellion for vengeance is part of the vengeance of God for David's rebellion. You reap what you sow. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses, 50 men to run before him. Years ago, when Israel wanted to leave the concept of the judges to have a king, there was a warning that Samuel gave to the people, 1 Samuel 8, verse 10. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked for a king. And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint for himself, for his chariots, to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. Now the interesting thing about this is the law forbade the king of Israel to have horses. Deuteronomy 17:14. Moses is talking to the children of Israel. They're not in the promised land yet. It's the end of the 40 years. A generation has died. The younger generation is now going to go across the Jordan. And Moses is sharing these words. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, shalt possess it, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me. Thou shalt in any wise set him a king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother, but he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause his people to return to Egypt to the end that they should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Absalom is repeating the wickedness that has been forewarned long ago. Don't do that. You know, the sad thing we're going to see as this story goes on much, much further down the road. You ever hear of Solomon's stables? He had thousands and thousands of horses. David's son. So it is. He's multiplied horses. This show of incredible majesty and power. And now he pretends to care for the people. Verse 2, and Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man had a controversy, came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel. So it is, people rightfully do go to the government for judgment on certain matters. And it was with this idea that people were coming to David for judgment, for justice. But sitting outside, before they got to David, is Absalom. What's going on? And of course, a person's coming in there and he's ever ready. And I have to believe with this beauty that we studied of Absalom and his long flowing hair. And now he's got this display of horses. He calls him over. What's the matter? Oh, somebody I can tell my story to. And he's implying that he cares, and this guy is pouring out his story. And he has this subtlety about him that I care for you. He didn't care at all. It was all a ruse. That people would think that he cared, but he was really stealing their hearts. He looked for people with problems, because when a person has a problem such that they're willing to go to the king of the nation, they're vulnerable at that point. Oh, you're going to help me? Oh, that's great. You care. So it is, they come with a plea. They're striving somehow, some way. And Absalom looked to these people who needed counsel. And he listened to their problem and pretended to care. Folks, we must be careful when we start pouring out our life story to who we're talking to. Be careful. He appeared friendly, but he meant much evil. Now, I want you to imagine this picture. Absalom is sitting there. Oh, I'm so sorry you have a problem. Now, we know the whole story. This is all a deception. But can you imagine going up to Absalom and saying, would you knock it off? I just care about the people. Now, we know reading the rest of the story, he doesn't. But what do you do with a guy like this? Absalom was a good politician. He pointed out, look at the end of verse 3, there was no man deputed of the king to hear thee. Boy, you've got a problem. David's government just is not providing for your needs. If I were elected, what a politician this guy is. Verse 4, Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, I would do him justice. I could do the job. He was a politician. He was smooth. He wants power. He has a display of power, and now he is trying to take the hearts of the people. He's already the king's son. He's the grandson to the king of Geshur, and he's chief ruler. Look at 2 Samuel 8:18. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over both the Cherethites, Pelethites, right here, and David's sons were chief rulers. But his attitude, his rebellion, his behavior has caused him to lose the influence, the ability to function as a chief ruler. And that's not enough. Now he wants David's throne. He is, tell me your problem, pretending to care. Let's just talk about this. How did the devil deceive Eve? Genesis 3:1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. Subtle. That is Absalom, which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said. Tell me about it. What did God really say? Plant that seed of doubt. You mean David doesn't have anybody set in there that can take care of my problem? I had no idea. I mean, you're his son. You would know. You're a chief ruler. You're right here at the gate. Planting seeds of doubt. It would cause the people to say, well, gee, if David's the king and you're his son, why are you sitting out here? What? Something must be wrong. But you care so much for the people. So it is. He is out there deceiving so subtly. Verse 5, and it was so, that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand, took and kissed him. Another show. He bowed before his father kissed him. No sincerity. You know the sad thing? There's a degree of truth to what Absalom is saying. You're not going to get justice if you go talk to my father. And I am going to drill this point home until the whole nation's against you. Because I'm so angry at you of what happened to my sister and you did not execute justice, I'll turn the nation on you because you will not administer justice. Thus it is. Look at verse 6. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. If we didn't know the rest of the story, we would think this man is as sincere as the day is long. But his real goal is not to help these people. Matter of fact, I don't even know what his real goal was. Was he really out to set up an honorable government? I'm not convinced. How can you set up an honorable government by undermining your very father? And instead of you being honest and talking, until you've tried that, don't try arms. The truth is, David is reaping what he has sown. And in your higher position you are, when you fall, you affect a lot of people, and he's affecting the nation of Israel. 2 Samuel 12:10, thou therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. The sword will never leave your house. And here it is. He has planned for 2 years before he murdered Amnon. For years he was in exile. He came back for 2 years, and now he's ready. Chapter 15, verse 7. It came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. That phrase, and it came to pass after 40 years, is a confusion. If you do the math on 40 years, it doesn't fit with Absalom's story, with his life, with the time constraints. Take a look. 2 Samuel, chapter 5, verse 4. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. Therefore, before the 30 years of age, he was an exile from, or shall I say, before 30 years of age, he was the fugitive with Saul trying to kill him. At 30 years of age, he comes and he becomes the king over all Israel, and he rules for 40 years. Therefore, David dies at 70. If you remember in our story, he at 30 years is taking the throne, and after that, Absalom is born. Now stop and think. Absalom is born after David is 30 years of age. Therefore, if David's only going to live for 40 years after he's the king, how can that be referring accurately to Absalom? It causes a great problem. So therefore, it makes you step back and really reflect, what is this saying? 1 Kings chapter 2:11, in the days that David reigned over Israel were 40 years. 7 years reigned he in Hebron, 30 and 3 years reigned he in Jerusalem. How do we reconcile this? Here's what I think we must do. We must stop right there where we are in our story in 2 Samuel chapter 15 and say, something happened 40 years ago that triggered what is happening now with Absalom. If you do some math and you stop and think about this, David being 30 when he takes the throne, and if you remember, we have gone through from the time David committed his adultery, the baby was born and then died, another baby is born, if you remember that, and then we took a look at the times of Amnon, 2 years before he's murdered, Absalom in exile 3 years, Absalom then coming back to Jerusalem for 2 years. Remember, we looked at this and it was 8.5 years. And you start to put all this together, and when you start to put it down on paper, you know, 40 years ago was pretty close to when David slew Goliath. Now let's think about that. David slew Goliath, and it is now referenced in chapter 15, verse 7, it came to pass after 40 years. Therefore, let us think about David slaying Goliath. He is a shepherd boy, and his father, Jesse, sends some food for his brothers and says, go out to the battlefield, see how your brothers are doing, and then come back. David gets there, and he sees this giant, and nobody's going out to fight him. What do we know about King Saul? He's head and shoulders bigger than everybody else. There's the giant of the Philistine, and down there, see the head and shoulders? That's our king, and he's not going out to fight. We're all living in fear. And he's our leader. He's not doing what he ought to do. And David went down there and said, I'll go. And David goes, and he takes his sling, and he hits the giant and kills him. Now, what happens after that? They come back from the rout, and the women are giving praise for the victory of the battle. 1 Samuel 18:8. Saul was very wroth. King Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. He said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands, and what can he have more but the kingdom. What is Absalom trying to take? The kingdom. And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. How was David treating Absalom? Not real well. It came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul. Judgment from God because of Saul's sin. Judgment from God because of David's sin. And he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the javelin. For he said, I will smite David to the wall even with it, but David avoided out of his presence twice. 40 years ago, King Saul was not the leader he should have been. Therefore, David was able to get the praise and, can I use the expression, steal the hearts of the people? David, you took 10,000 of the Philistines. Saul got his 10,000s. And now what is Absalom doing? David is not being the king he ought to be. And Absalom has stolen the hearts of the people. Because Saul was wrong, David was also wrong. I think that is a fulfillment of reaping and sowing. Because King Saul was not what he should have been, David. Didn't you learn from that? Didn't you learn from long ago how the king can be a disappointment? And now you just repeated it. I find it interesting as we step back and think about this. There are unanswered questions about this rebellion. You do wonder exactly what Absalom is really hoping to accomplish. Does he really feel that he's going to set up this wholesome government, God-honoring? What really is driving it? Is it just bitterness? He probably isn't even thinking about 3 years down the road. All he knows right now is he is so angry at his father, he has plotted for this overthrow, but I don't think he's thought about what's going to happen in 2, 5, and 10 years from now. I think it's a culmination of things that have provoked him to this point. His father's lack of judgment. He's angry because of his upbringing in a home with multiple women and therefore half-brothers and sisters running around. He's upset because of his exile in Geshur. He's upset because of his exile in his own home in Jerusalem. And it's a culmination, I believe, of all of these frustrations. And he's stolen the hearts of the people. And we have to wonder, what is the ultimate goal? Do you just want to be a spoiler? You know, as I step back and look at this, let us really try to transport ourselves back to Israel of thousands of years ago. And you're looking at this, and half the people don't even realize what they're up against. I don't know. I went down to the gate there for justice, and I talked to Absalom, and boy, he told me that there's just no judgment here, and I don't know what's going on, but he sure cared about me. Boy, does he have the horses. You ought to see his soldiers. The common man sees this, but I don't think he can possibly understand what is truly going on. I don't think the Jerusalem newspaper was listing all of the juicy news on the David family. And I think surely there was the rumor mills and the talk. But they really didn't understand. And we're going to see that as this goes on. Now, there were people that in their simplicity had no clue. And they were innocent victims. But the point that I want to get out of that is this not where we are many times in this world? If we really, really knew what was going on behind the scenes, I think it would blow our minds. But even then, do you know what's really going on? God's on the throne. And you can't take him out of the picture without coming up with a very warped view of this world. The truth is, this world does have problems. We don't know the whole story. We can sit here, and the truth is, we only know what the media tells us. And depending upon which news channel you listen to, you'll get a different vantage point. Therefore, as the common man, we don't really know many times. And we do the best we can to scratch out a living on this earth and let us seek God, because no matter what, He's in control. No matter how high and mighty these people may think they are, no matter how much money or prestige or influence, God's on the throne. And folks, that gives us great peace. So as you really look at this and try to portray yourself in those days with Absalom leading this rebellion and the smokescreen, the deceptions, the truth is, I don't know, but God's on the throne. Let's just seek His face and everything will be fine. That really must be one of the greatest conclusions we can come to as we consider this. The truth is, the real truth is, as we look at why is Absalom doing this, what is the reason? Chapter 12, verse 10, therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house. That's why, because God said so. He is suffering judgment. If it didn't come from the hand of Absalom, it would have come from somewhere else. But the truth is, we could sit here, well, you know, if he would have brought him back from Geshur, and if he wouldn't have exiled him in Jerusalem, and if he would have done that... God said the sword's not going to leave your house. That's the real issue. God said it. And that's the way it is. We would do well to learn that.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.